Good evening, everyone. This is Richie, K2KNB. And I've spoken to Dick, and he's still under the weather, feeling a lot better, but still under the weather, will not be able to do the TechNet tonight. Hopefully you'll have kind of like what occurred last week with Roy and Paul filling in and having discussions. But again, TechNet will be canceled again this week. Hopefully we'll be back next week. Also, if someone will stay on frequency for another 10 or 15 minutes just to make that announcement, unless Roy comes on and does pick up the TechNet. This is K2KMD. Have a good night.
K2KMD, WB2GXM, all monitor.
All right, thanks. And as I said, Roy may come on and actually run a net. And if not, for 15 minutes, so it would be great. Thank you, K2KMD.
No problem.
Ricky, I hope Dick's okay. I hope Dick's okay. This is Paul, M2DQI. Thank you.
Well, never fear. Roy is here. This is C2GS, and although Dick isn't able to join us tonight, hopefully we'll be back next Sunday night. I thought we would try and put on a show here, all of us. Paul is available, is ready for a space report. I have my science talk, but before we do either of those, I give people who are listening the option of kind of deciding what to do with the early part. If you want to talk about technology, I'm not an electrical engineer, but I know a few things. If you have even questions of non-amateur-based technology, computer technology, or hotspots, or other type of things, and you want to throw it out, feel free. So this is kind of an open point. If you know, no one has anything particularly to ask or talk about, I can always kind of fall back on the old science talk. But we'll give you guys a chance. Hit me with your best shot, as it goes.
And WS2N, I just want to make sure my antenna is pointing the right way, and you sound very good tonight, Roy.
AC2GS from WB2GS, I'm glad you're here. I pass the gauntlet to you.
Okie doke, Rich. I'm more than happy to hold on to the gauntlet. I just hope that we can get people to participate. I always like it when people kind of interact, and I get to say some stuff, and other people get to say things back at me, and we all learn from the experience. I would like to take a portion of tonight, if possible, to discuss, and I know it's sort of depressing and annoying and repetitious, the coronavirus, because I've heard a lot of really strange things on the repeaters, or even ours, where people are kind of saying dubious thing. The problem is that people tend to veer into one of two lanes rather than stay in the middle of the road. Either close to panic, which you shouldn't, because that leads to irrational thought and not terribly constructive acts, all the way to paranoia, where they think it's all just some kind of a farce and people are just kind of conning everyone. Which is probably not a good thing either. Best to be in the middle of the lane, personally. But we'll get into the details if people are interested in that as the night progresses. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics or they want anything in particular for this segment, please feel free to ID and tell me what's on your mind.
WS2N. Roy, I just want to make sure I was getting through okay. You sound good tonight, but just wanted to double check.
2 Bravo Zulu.
Rich recognized Paul, you're sounding great. Obviously, that antenna is pointed just right.
Fine business. We'll be here. Back to you, Roy.
Hey, Doc. Rich, good old W2BZ. What can I do you for?
Well, you and I actually went over some of this, but I want to report. I pulled apart a high-end inkjet printer because it was no longer capable of working. I tried everything for a month, and it's dead, dead. But I pulled it apart, and I salvaged some parts, five of which are most. And what you don't know, Roy, is that for 12 volts. And let me let it drop. I'm having a heat problem with my handy talking. Okay, so so they are turning, and what I want to do is somehow jury-rig one of these motors to operate an air variable capacitor for a loop, magnetic loop. And that's where Roy and I left off on a private conversation. And I was just wondering, I know it's a very open-ended question, but what now? What would be my next step now in trying to get this thing actually working with an air variable capacitor? As in, how do I stop the thing when I hear maximum noise? And I'm wondering if it can be backed up also, if it can go bi-directional. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Well, Rick, it sort of depends on the specs of the motor that you're using. If it's a bi-directional DC motor, it's simply a matter of changing the polarity, and it's going to rotate in the opposite direction. As far as stopping it when it gets to the sweet spot, the simplest approach is to kill the power. It depends upon the angular inertia of the motor of how much it wobbles. The problem, as always, with something like a magnetic loop is that it has such an incredibly high Q that a little bit of wobbling in the capacitor is going to put you straight past the resonance peak of that tuned circuit. So probably the best approach would be to use some kind of a stepper assembly and some intelligence, you know, either a Arduino or a Raspberry Pi, and write a program, because I think that's really what's at the guts of most of these commercial packages that have these noise bridges for tuning these things. But theoretically, you can do it. The problem is how much tolerance these devices have, and will you pass the sweet spot? And then can you possibly figure out a way of cutting the power before you hit the sweet spot, knowing the time delay and the inertia of the motor? So ultimately, it comes down to knowing your motor. You have to know what it is. Is it just a standard DC motor? Is it a stepper motor? Is it bi-directional? You sort of have to know those things before you can decide on how you're going to implement a circuit around them.
Okay, this has three numbers associated with it. One is, I think, 13 digits long, starts with R, Sierra. And another number, which starts with QN, Queen Nancy, and is about 10 digits long. And then the last number is 00 dot E like Edward, M like Mary, 18. Would you know which of those numbers is the number that tells all about what I need to know?
Offhand, no, I couldn't tell you. I would suggest, since Google is relatively inexpensive, to try all three digits and hope for the best. The problem many times is that these identifiers, if you're lucky, are commercial designations for the device, and you'll pull up a spec sheet. If you're unlucky, they're internal identification numbers, and none of us will have access any of the specifications, but I would just type out those numbers and maybe help it out by saying motor and see if you can possibly find it in Google. And if you're able to, then pat yourself on your back and congratulate yourself, because that's a big part of the work that you have to do done by someone else. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if these are internal ID numbers and that haven't seen any internet activity. But give it a try because it doesn't cost anything. But I would try all three digits.
Hey, I will do that. And as the days, hours, days, weeks, months, and years of reports have had any luck salvaging a motor from an Epson 3880 inkjet printer and actually getting a working 20-meter magnetic loop. Thanks, Roy. Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu.
Well, Rich, as always, I wish you luck on this, and I hope you come back and tell Dick your war story and how you solved it, because all this is good and all this is useful information. You never know anyone else who's trying to do something similar. You know, always comes in helpful. More information is always better than less. So good luck, Rich, and come back and tell everyone how it went.
We'll do CW 20 meters.
Rich, unfortunately, you break up every so often, and you had a very short transmission, so half of what you said didn't come across. So about once every 30 seconds, you drop for about 2-3 seconds.
I thought that problem was solved. I changed the positioning of my just a half an hour or so before, and I thought the dropout part. I have a heat problem. And I wonder, by the way, if I might ask the second question for now or later. Does anybody know any kludgy way of adding a heat sink to a handy talkie, specifically a Yaesu FT60R?
Okay, all you guys listening out there, if you have any experience with this handy talkie, I mean, I'll always put my 2 cents worth after you. But if anyone has any coaching advice about installing a heat sink for a handy talkie, I guess ultimately what it comes down to is getting access to the thermal heat sink that's internal to the handy talkie, so that you don't have any thermal insulation between that and a big piece of radiating metal. But if anyone has any expertise in this particular handy talkie, please give us your name and your call sign. Okay, Rich, apparently no one's had any expertise. If possible, I would suggest that you take the shell off as best you can, see where the power module is located, and see if there's some way that you can put some kind of a thermally conductive material. You know, they're for CPUs and such, they use heat pipes and all kinds of fun stuff. So what you need to do is get across that thermal barrier of the plastic case, I assume it's plastic, of your handy talkie, and get something that's really nice and thermally conductive, and then either with a big surface area or with a ventilating fan to blow off some of that heat into your environment.
The entire, right below the outer crust of this handy talkie, would say that most are fairly in terms of heat, but I would think right below it is the case that the chassis and all the other parts are attached to a fairly of metal that is in the shape of the handy, and I'm sure being used as heat sink. Question would be is if I can tap into this and attach something to it that's coming out of the radio, what would be that thing that I attach to it? Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, by the way, you're dropping out about every third second at this point, so I'm getting about 50% of what you're saying. Any thermal load, if you will, and anything that could dissipate a lot of heat. If you have heat sinks, if you have a block of aluminum with fins on it, again, anything that has a large surface area that is that conducts a great deal of heat, you know, the exact opposite of plastic. If you have copper, that would be great. If you have aluminum, that would be okay. So highly thermally conductive, large surface area, and if you want to put the cherry on top of it all, you put a fan to blow air through the grid work, if you have that available.
Yes, but what?
All I got of that was what, and you cut off.
Or she hanging out of it. And I don't, it may not make any difference if you have it just surrounding the handy talkie, because I only use this as a base station. What design configuration would you have it? And sorry about the dropouts, this is working fine just a half hour ago.
Okay, your last 20 seconds was perfect. There wasn't a single dropout, so I'm not quite sure what's causing these dropouts. I don't know if you're over-modulating the repeater and you're falling out of the deviation, or there's some kind of erratic switch that's not quite making it all the time. Again, I would just aim for both stability. You don't want the thing falling apart, and the highest surface area you can make it with enough thermal contact with thermally a conductive material in the handy talkie. In other words, you don't want one square millimeter of surface area of your heat sink touching the warm part of your walkie talkie. You want as much of the heat sink abutting the heat dissipating portion of your handy talkie as possible. And then it should be in some kind of mechanically stable configuration and then have a large surface area. So most likely what is going to end up happening is you'll find a piece of metal that will sort of do, and you'll jury-rig something, because very few people have a tool shop where they can machine aluminum parts at will and custom design. So if you have something that has a lot of fins that are made out of aluminum, I would just abut it to the side. You might want to invest in a little thermal conductive paste to help dissipate the temperature. It can't hurt.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I missed part of it because he's in and out. Is this HT always on the desk? It's always on the desk. You get these little battery-operated fans. I use one that works great. You know, it's made by O2. You just put 2D batteries in, and it lasts forever. I mean, you could go like from 1 year to another. For some reason, it's just a real good fan. But if he's using it, you know, if he's walking around with it, then of course that's out. But is this on a desk all the time?
Yes, by the way, not on the handheld mic. I wonder if there's any difference. But yes, it's on the desk all the time. Just had a thought, if I could make it out of a piece of sheet metal or copper, I could actually design something that would be, let's say, a stand for the FPC that just flung.
Well, Rich, you went through a small patch where you were there for at least 10, 15 seconds, and then a longer patch where you weren't there for more than 2 seconds. So, again, not quite sure what's going on. What Paul suggested is also an option. If your thermal problem isn't severe, blowing just colder room air across it can't hurt. So you might want to try that just with a fan as an experiment and see how good, bad, or indifferent that is. But as you mentioned, you can take a sheet of copper if you're so inclined. And again, I would consider connecting it, it's mechanically with something that's dissipating the heat in the handy talkie, and maybe using a thermal conductive grease to improve that. And then I would probably crimp the copper sheet so that it would have a rather large surface area for a smaller volume. But as Paul suggested, a fan might be a simpler solution if you don't need a lot of heat dissipation.
Yeah, the one I use, Roy, is O2 Cool, they call it, at $10. But, you know, you get it from Walmart, two D batteries, and you're good to go. Very quiet, I never hear it.
This is a Walmart about 10 minutes from here. I think I might try that tomorrow. That's one thing. The what was the second point that I had? I forget for the moment, but it sounds a 3D.
Rich, are you there? You said something about 3D and you faded. I assume you were asking Paul about the number of batteries required to power this fan.
Actually said was I'm on mid power. I should pick it up anyway for the last 2 seconds questioning. I just said coyly, it sounds like a 3D printer might come in handy for a project such as this.
Well, perhaps an industrial one that can 3D print sintered metal and then melt it down, because the problem is you need something that's thermally conductive. I mean, unless you're talking more of a case of just a mechanical attachment for the fan that just puts the fan close enough so that it can blow the cold air. For that, yeah, you can theoretically use a 3D printer that uses plastic. But for the actual thermally conductive stuff, that's industrial-grade 3D printers.
That I'm thinking more of fabricating a stand, which the handy talkie to, but pack that stand or wrap it in a sheet of copper or something like that. In other words, so on the inside it would be plastic 3D printed stand, but on the outside I would screw together, cut and mold or whatever, I would screw together the heat sink. Go ahead. I think maybe time with this one, but if anybody has any ideas.
Okay, Rich. Yeah, I mean, theoretically, it's not that difficult to make a base for a handy talkie. There are websites that have large storages of 3D models, and I made bases for a lot of my handy talkies. I brought them to the Hamfest and such to show people, and a couple of the jokesters picked up the handy talkie and said, "Did you 3D print that?" So it's possible to build a base and then wrap it around with some highly thermally conductive metal. Again, the important thing, I think, is to increase the surface area as much as you can. The more surface area to the thermally conductive material, the less you have to worry about having an active fan. It's more effective as a passive thermal dissipator. So, I wish you good luck. If anyone else had any suggestions or ideas, please feel free to hit that push-to-talk button.
Comment, which means, what, 1.25 watts or something like that, going 20, 25 miles to Selden. And now I may be over my
comment,
holding the mic too close, something along those lines might be a nice way to handle it. Anyway, thanks so much, Roy. Back to Ned. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
You're welcome, Rich. Someone was saying comment while you were talking. You want to ID yourself?
K2GJE, Ed.
Okay, please, comment away.
There's a company, I think they're in New Jersey, called McMaster. They have all kinds of sheet copper, sheet aluminum, all little kinds of pieces of hardware. You can get that catalog. I believe you probably can get it online. McMaster, over.
Thank you, Ed. Yes, I've heard of them. They have a vast collection of just about any type of mechanical bit they have in their catalogs, is my understanding. I don't know whether it's the least expensive. You can probably, Rich could probably jury-rig something out of either a Home Depot or some giant box store in his neighborhood, whereas McMaster's, although they have an incredibly diverse collection of things, I think you end up paying a bit more than these less expensive storefronts. But that's also a good suggestion, Ed.
Mostly, I would think, sell to businesses as opposed to hobbyists. That's why their prices are inflated. Same thing with TV production equipment. For little filters, the prices are outrageous because whether they're selling it to me or CBS, doesn't matter, just the price, and CBS will pay anything for anything that they need. So, guys, back to net.
My understanding is all companies that buy from McMaster's, also craftsmen, people with their own little shops, and kind of prosumer type. You know, most people aren't even aware of McMaster. If you go, well, you go on YouTube all the time, you'll inevitably find some guy who will cite an item that has a stock number, McMaster, and they'll flash the catalog at the video. So it's high end. You know, it's not the generic Joe Public. It's not like going to a Home Depot and picking up some machine screws. If you need a titanium base with a specific thread ratio and specific non-generic head configuration and all kinds of things, no doubt you will find it in this incredible catalog. And if you don't have anything better to do, you know, check up their website. I don't know if they have it all on PDF, but if you're a catalog guy, and I used to love catalogs, and I still do, it's sort of amazing to see some of these companies that still continue to offer such an incredibly large inventory. But you got to pay for that kind of inventory, and so that's why McMaster is not a discount joint, at least from my perspective.
QHUC with a comment.
SHUC.
Yeah, Roy, I've been using McMaster forever. You don't even need the PDF catalog. Now they have a nice app. You get it at the App Store for iPhone, or I know they have one for the Android, too. And you just, I mean, you can see everything that you could ever want and order it right through the app. No PDFs, no catalogs needed. KD2HUC, back to net.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that information. I wasn't aware of that. I mean, maybe I'm just an old cranky guy. I really used to love catalogs. There was nothing. I mean, I remember being a little kid and just kind of digesting the Sears catalog. We had a strange custom in my family. My parents told me that I could go through the Sears catalog and pick out any toy that I wanted. Not that they would buy me any of those toys, but I could pick them out. So from an early age, from there I went to Lafayette, and I don't want to go down memory lane. You know, I would miss it if there wasn't a PDF as well, but I can understand the much more efficient way of just doing a simple search, coming up with exactly what you want and placing an order. So it's nice to know. Thank you very much.
Does anybody know if they have like a six-color, 500-page catalog for the asking? Because those things are usually works of art in and of themselves.
don't know. I would assume so, but I might be wrong. Different companies have different protocols. Sometimes they go ultra cheap, and they just offer the PDF and expect you to print it if you really want it. Others will send you a copy no matter what, and some guys in the middle will only send it to customers who maintain some kind of a business with them. HUC, do you have any idea whether getting a catalog in person is a big problem with McMaster?
They definitely did have a catalog. It was not color. It was on a lower quality. It was almost printed like a phone book with a bright yellow cover, and then the very fragile pages that were only printed in black and white. But I haven't seen that catalog in probably a good 10 years. I don't know if they still print it. KD2HUC, back to net.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Rich, what I would basically suggest is go to the website, see if you could find a place to request a catalog, and if you can, so be it. If not, if you want to download the PDF, I could sort of understand why McMaster would have it in that type of condition, because it probably has a ridiculously large number of pages, and you really don't need anything more than black and white to see screws and pieces of alloy and all kinds of geometric patterns can be defined in black and white, and the thinner the paper, the more the less weight it is to ship and such. So I would suggest going on the website, checking it out. You might be able to finagle a catalog from them. If not, you may want to settle for just a PDF.
One form or another, I will have their catalog before the TechNet is over tonight. Thanks again, Roy. Back to net.
WB2GXM with a question.
Pretty much you bet that you're not going to get it shipped to you in the next hour or two, but I wish you good luck, and I'm sure, I don't know if other people have this fascination for catalogs, but there are still surprisingly a lot of companies that have enormous catalogs with enormous inventories, and I never get bored looking through them. I'm always fascinated at all the things that everyone, including myself, takes for granted about all the optional extras and thingamabobs on equipment that we sort of take for granted. Anyway, this is AC2GS. I don't think I date myself in 10 entire minutes. So if anyone else has any questions or topics they would like to discuss tonight for our little impromptu sort of TechNet, please feel free.
AC2GS from WB2GXM.
AC2DAW.
That's Rich and DAW recognize. Rich, what do you want to say?
Well, a few moments ago you alluded to the fact that you may have a 3D printer. So I'm interested to find out what model of 3D printer you have and what you paid for it. On a recent issue of CQ Magazine, it was stated that you can get a 3D printer under $200 nowadays, which kind of makes me happy and amazed at the same time.
2GS, 82HQC, with a quick comment.
Thank you, sir.
I don't know if you hear him, but SHO has been trying to get a comment in via Echo Link for the past 5 minutes. I don't know if he's making it through to Weston Repeater. KD2HUC, back to net.
The only person I have listed on Echo Link is KD2BPG.
He's probably... It's not an LP that I'm trying to get in on, but yeah, it's really difficult with all the fast keying to come in with a comment. This is KC2, SHO.
Welcome, John. IRLP. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not used to doing quite this, so you have to forgive us all for our fast keying. What would you like to say tonight, John?
I'm before the subject changes, I just I found it interesting, the conversation about running the handheld on the desk with a fan, and thought it might be of interest that my IRLP node runs nets like this for hours on end with the Baofeng as the node radio. So, you know, almost 100% duty. Very little fans just blowing on the back of that. It's hardwired in, obviously, so all that aluminum on the back of the radio there, or well, whatever that metal is exposed to that fan, and it's been doing this for 5 years, maybe. Just thought you might find that interesting with the current subject. Back to you, Roy, and this is KC2SHO, Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Indeed, thanks for telling us. Paul also uses a fan. I was thinking more in terms of thermally conductive heat sinks and such, passive rather than active. I have actually, on one of my little mobile radios, FTM-400, I believe, you could buy a little base, and it has a little bit of a thermal conduction to it, and it includes a fan that you could run. Unfortunately, you have to run about 10 volts through it. That's how it's spec, so you'd have to buy a wall wart, which seems ridiculous because everything seems to be designed for 12 volts, so I simply jury-rigged something with a voltage drop resistor across it to give me that 10 volts. But yeah, the fan is an option as well to Rich.
Would a hole, a carefully drilled hole, through the back, where of course clearing all important components, help with a fan blowing on the back, or not needed?
Well, ultimately, it depends upon whether you have a good thermal conduction going on between the inside, where the final power module is for the handy talkie, and the external case. If it's made out of something that doesn't conduct much heat, like plastic, putting something more thermally conductive will improve the efficiency. But you know, if it's all metal, and if it's using the case itself as a heat sink, then you probably just need to blow air through it. No holes required. So it depends upon exactly how it's designed and what's the material on the surface of the handy talkie.
Let me see if I have it. For discrete components that are simple 3-pin devices that will give you pretty stable output. Matter of fact, if you buy one of these lighter adapters for the Baofeng and such, they have that just basically inside the battery case, so that doesn't leave the aluminum exposed. But since I do it externally, you know, the battery's not on there. So all that back of the radio there, where all that nice metallic material is to sink that heat off, is exposed. If you go to my QRZ page, you'll see photos of what I've done. It may be helpful. I don't know. Just thought it was interesting. Hope that's helpful. And I have some part numbers written down somewhere for those discrete components. EB2GZKC2SHO.
Okay, very good. Thank you, John. I'm looking up your QRZ page. It might be an object in a bigger picture. I'm trying to find it here.
Yeah, it's down past the photos of the shack. I don't know if all the photos there are there, but also when I started this little project, I'd started building a bunch of those, and there's also a website, Nodefang, NodeFang.com. There may be more photos there than there are on the QRZ page.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I see one of the images with his Baofeng, and there appears to be some metal screws coming out of it and into a case. That's probably part of the thermal conduction system. and I'll have to look at the other NodeFang entry. But, yeah, I mean, all these things are excellent ideas. It sort of depends upon how much heat you got to dissipate and how quickly you have to dissipate it and how much time and effort you want to put into the experiment.
Andy Talker's known for timing out with heat warnings, or could something else with my Yaesu 60R be going on?
Not in my experience, and other people can add theirs to the mix. I don't know if it's that it's heating up. I don't know if it's over deviating. What we could do is a little experiment is to move the handy talkie, I don't know, about 8, 9, 10 inches away from your mouth, and if your volume goes down but the dropouts go away, then we know you're over deviating, as opposed to these odd little cutouts that I don't know if they're due to power outages on the level of your handy talkie.
Flash heat on the LCD screen when it does time out. I'm just wondering if because these are not made as base stations and made basically for short transmissions, is that what I'm running into, or is it something else that's going on? That's my question.
Okay, I mean, ultimately, a lot of our equipment is sort of designed for a limited duty cycle. I found, much to my annoyance, when I was doing my little presentation, where basically I was transmitting about 90 to 95% of the time, that some of my equipment didn't particularly enjoy that experience. At one point, I needed to kind of use something I lovingly called an overthruster, which is a RM Italy amplifier that boosts my VH signal all the way up to about 160-odd watts. And that thing got roasty-toasty after a couple of stories. So none of them are really designed for anything more than probably 50% duty cycle. But I don't know if handy talkies are inherently under-engineered more than mobile stations, if you will.
Does anybody out there know that? Whether I should be able to key down and talk for 5 minutes without any problem after a minute or 2 minutes, you're starting getting into iffy territory. Back to that.
2GMB.
GMB.
And just a quick comment. Don't forget the antennas are usually dual-band antennas. They're compromised antennas. Perhaps a dedicated 2-meter antenna, if that's what you're talking on, might help the efficiency, the throughput, and, you know, minimize any reflected power and keep it cooler.
I'm using an outdoor, very simple vertical dipole, just cut for 2 meters.
Kind of help. That definitely has to help. It'd probably be only hotter if you had a cheap stubby on there. So that's definitely a step in the right direction. KD2GMB.
Okay, anyone else with anything on this subject before I turn back to Rich? Ask me one of my favorite questions about 3D printing. For a couple of ham fests, I dragged a lot of the things that I made over there and showed people. But before we get to that, anyone else want to comment about Rich's the problem of heat dissipation? Okay, so we'll move on to Rich. You're still with us, right, Rich?
I'm listening.
Okay, a couple years ago, I thought I needed a new hobby. I always need a new hobby for some strange reason. And 3D printing appealed to me. It had matured to a degree. Up until about 4 or 5 years ago, most of the important things about 3D printers were held up in patents, and commercial companies charged a lot of money for commercial 3D printers, and so you couldn't get a cheap 3D printer. But then the patent thankfully expired, and the world was flooded all over the place with 3D printers. The printer that I chose happens to be a Tier Time. It's called an Up Mini 2. It's sold for about $500. I got it on a Christmas sale. The thing that I particularly like about mine, although it doesn't have the largest volume that printers have, is that it's fully enclosed and has a filtration system inside of it. So you don't have to be quite as worried with plastic fumes and such getting into your lungs. And for me, that was somewhat more important than the other factors involved. So I'm kind of happy with my Up Mini 2. There are Chinese manufacturers, and the Tier Time is a Chinese manufacturer. Most of these are made by China. China makes most of everything. The model that you were talking about, Rich, is Creality. Makes a lot of reasonably good quality 3D printers for dirt cheap. Some of them require some degree of assembly. Some require less. Some require more. There are some problems occasionally with thermal runaway on some models. But you can theoretically go to someplace like Amazon, put down $200, and you got a 3D printer. Let me drop for a second so I don't time out the repeater. There's different technologies of 3D printing. The major one that most people talk about are filament-based, in which plastic is melted in a heater, and a nozzle applies a layer after layer as servos shift the position of the printhead in 3D space, and so adds up on the plastic until you've built up a figure. There are two diameters for the filaments. The most popular is 1.75 millimeters. There are different types of plastic. There's ABS plastic, there's PLA plastic, and there's about a dozen other more esoteric plastics out there. They all have slightly different qualities. They melt at different temperatures. They're thermally more stable or less stable. They're UV resistant and not so UV resistant, depending upon what kind of the chemistry is involved. So 3D printing is quite interesting to me, at least. You don't have to supply your own 3D model. You can download, there are thousands upon thousands of free files where if you like what something looks like, you can pull it down from the cloud. And more times than not, it actually does print acceptably. And I found it loads of fun. So have I at least answered most of your questions, Rich?
Affirmative, Roy. The price is amazing. I do perceive that there is going to be a learning curve if I decide I'm interested in 3D. I would have to learn about all the properties of these different filaments and curing times, and I've heard about using the correct base to prevent curling at the bottom, and stability, and all sorts of good stuff.
Rich, like most things, it's not a turnkey operation. It's much more of a turnkey operation now than it was 4 or 5 years ago. There are different ways to make a model more stable. If you spend plastic building a temporary base, it's much more structurally stable than if you don't. And there are all kinds of different variables. You can set temperatures. It's sort of, unfortunately, to a degree, what software-defined radio is for some people who use Anantech, where they like to tweak all the settings. You can theoretically tweak 100 different settings on a 3D printer, or you can leave them at the company offset and only use standard type of plastics like ABS and PLA. There's also other technologies involved that do 3D printing. There are 3D printers that are based on UV curing. What goes on with those is they basically repurpose a tablet type of LCD screen, shine ultraviolet light through it, change the pattern as time goes on, and what happens is where the UV strikes the liquid, it congeals, and then a stepper raises it to the next level, the screen changes pattern, the UV light goes on again, it cures the next level, and so as time goes on, it raises the polymerized material up out of the bath and gives you a 3D UV cured image. Then you take it off and you expose it to a lot more UV to stabilize it, and then you have a model that way. That's usually a little bit more of a pain in the backside. It's more messy because you have to deal with a noxious organic liquid, and it's more expensive. As far as the first type of 3D printer, you can buy a kilogram of plastic filament for as little as $12, whereas for the UV-cured chemical solution, that costs about two or three times as much, and then you got the fumes to worry about. So there's all kinds of different things. It's a different world. It's sort of, I still remember one day it was raining, and I wanted to kind of get out of the rain for a moment, and I stopped into a bicycle shop that I didn't frequent bicycle shops, and realized in one fell swoop that there was this whole culture that I knew absolutely nothing about. And it goes the same with 3D printing. There is a learning curve. It's not terribly steep, but it does exist, and if you expect to get it out of the box and have perfect models of everything in a couple of days, you'll...
Repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
WA2CDL.
Sandy.
I sorry to interrupt. I have a message for W2BZ. Is he still on the air?
That's right, yeah. W2BZ is still here.
Can you call me on the phone, please?
Absolutely. Just one second. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Just call me on the phone because I have a message for you. Thank you. I don't want to tie up the TechNet.
Andy, okay. I will call you on the phone right now. Thanks. Back to them.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Roy, W8CDO.
Welcome, Andy. This, once again, is AC2GS. I got to keep remembering to identify myself. This is a kind of informal get-together here, so I keep on missing the 10-minute block. So, Rich, did I kind of answer your questions, or did it elicit any other new questions?
Well, thank you for the overview, Roy. I'm interested, and I appreciate it. AC2GS, this is WB2GXF. In regards to Andy, hello.
Okay, anyone else with any topics or questions or comments? Otherwise, I guess I will go to the usual news, science news stuff. But again, if you have any kind of questions on just about any type of topic that's technological, feel free. Give it a try.
AC2KY.
Say AC2KY.
Yes, sir. I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit, since you would be the voice of reason, about the coronavirus, because the information that you get from the CDC on the TV, I'm just not sure, you know, the accuracy of it all.
Sure, Warren. Matter of fact, as I mentioned earlier tonight, that I planned on doing a little bit of a presentation and then asking people if they have any questions on the subject, and and kind of getting into as much of the nitty-gritty as anyone's interested in.
Okay. I'm all in, so I'm all ears. Whatever you do it.
Okay, I just want to make sure that everyone has had their fill of technical talk. So if you have any other questions or comments or topics or such subjects, please feel free to mention them now. Okay, so be it. We'll jump into good old COVID-19. The last time I checked the statistics was about an hour ago. And these things change minute to minute, unfortunately. There has been reported 109,838 detected cases spread over 104 countries and territories. There have been 3,805 reported deaths related to this virus. The World Health Organization believes that the COVID-19 virus's mortality rate is 3.4%. Which I think is a little bit of an overstatement. I think ultimately it's going to be recalculated at a lower rate when we get better, more accurate numbers. Anyway, the rate of infections has slowed down a bit in China. The countries with the second highest reported infection count now is Italy, with a count of 7,375 known patients and 366 deaths related to the virus. And they announced an increase in the death count by 133 in the last day or so. So that's a big bump up. You all might have noticed the economic markets have grown frightened of this virus, with the global stock markets losing a reported $6 trillion in value over the first 6 days of its panic. If that's an accurate assessment, then they probably have lost even more in this past week. But stocks, as we all know, can recover, and the lost value can return when less doubt and fear return to the market. So there is, though, estimates of over $1 trillion of actual income being lost due to the businesses going into this standby mode during this crisis. Those losses are not so easily replaced. Let me drop for a sec.
Net tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
Okay, here in the good old U.S. of A., we've had 529 cases of the infection and 21 deaths related to this virus. Now, we still lack the ability to adequately test this infection in significant numbers. The World Health Organization has reportedly shipped testing kits to more than 57 countries. China supposedly had 5 commercial tests on the market 1 month ago and can now do reportedly up to 1.6 million tests a week. South Korea has tested more than 140,000 people so far. The United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention, in contrast, had done only about 459 tests total only a week ago. The rollout of a CDC-designed test kit to state and local labs has become a bit of a fiasco because it contained a faulty reagent. Labs around the country eager to test more suspected cases and test them faster have been unable to do so, and no commercial or state lab had gotten approval to use their own tests until very recently. The politicians in charge of coordinating our response promised that the CDC and private companies would have 1 million tests available by the end of this past week. That shrunk to a predicted 75,000, and journalists have only been able to document less than 2,000 tests that have been documented in this country. This weekend, they say they're predicting that millions of viral tests will be available in the United States by the early part of this coming week, but we'll have to see if that is merely an optimistic view or a realistic prediction. Just to show you that we are all in this together, the recent conservative conference, CPAP, that the president and vice president attended had at least one participant that tested positive for COVID-19 after the event. He placed himself in voluntary isolation somewhere in New Jersey. So stay tuned. This will get worse before it gets better, and stay safe. Let me drop, and I will give you a little information about influenza. Okay, a couple of points. The CDC issues its weekly update on influenza, and as I've mentioned in the past, influenza kills a lot of people every single year. We've just kind of grown used to it, unfortunately. Overall, the hospitalization rates remain similar to this time during recent seasons, but rates among school-aged children and young adults are higher at this time than in recent seasons, and rates among children 0 to 4 years old are now the highest that the CDC has seen on record at this point in the season, surpassing the rate reported during the second wave in the 2009 H1N1 pandemic.